forced to face relentless attacks. Every day, every night, we faced immense difficulties. Now things are much better.
A truce with the Taliban holding for the moment. It's Friday, February 28, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, President Trump tries to soothe nerves about COVID-19, protecting Uyghur culture, and classic Cambodian music no longer outlawed. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The number of COVID-19 cases in South Korea continues to jump, and the spread of the virus is having an effect on diplomatic and defense issues related to North Korea. VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo briefed my colleague Kate Pound Dawson on the latest.
Well, as of about 1 week ago, there were only around 30 to 50 infections, confirmed infections of the coronavirus in South Korea. As of today, that number has shot up to 1,766. Today was actually the biggest daily increase yet. We saw over 500 new confirmed infections. This is shooting up rapidly. It's in part because South Korea is very technologically advanced. They're very proactive at testing. They've tested a lot of people, therefore they have a lot more confirmed cases. However, this is creating a sense of worry. I wouldn't say panic, but a sense of widespread worry in South Korea. And it's obviously worse in the southeastern region near Daegu, the fourth largest city, but it is starting to spread in many different parts of the country, and it seems only a matter of time before it will be in every region of the country.
Now, how is this affecting the relationship between North Korea and South Korea? North Korea so far has said it does not have any infections. And at the same time, there's been an effort to build a different, better relationship between the South and the North, as well as the U.S. effort to negotiate on North Korea's nuclear weapons. How does this factor into the mix?
Well, the immediate result on the nuclear talks is that they have just been absolutely slammed shut. North Korea has essentially walled itself in from the outside world. They've prevented any international tourists from coming. Yeah, so they've attempted to close their border with China. What we are hearing from sources here in South Korea is that it has been weeks since North Korean officials have been able to actually get out and meet their counterparts, whether that's the U.S. counterparts or European counterparts. They've essentially walled themselves in. So these talks have gone nowhere, but the interesting thing is that the U.S. and South Korea were actually forced to postpone indefinitely their military exercises that were planned to start next week. The result of that is that there may be fewer tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. These military exercises, of course, were the source of great frustration by North Korea. Every year when these happen, they usually make a big racket and do something in response, whether that's test a missile or have their own exercises. That apparently will not happen now, but that doesn't mean that everything's okay, because North Korea obviously very worried about this infection spreading within its own borders.
Well, you mentioned the U.S. forces there in South Korea. We do know that there is one U.S. service member who has been affected. How is the coronavirus affecting the U.S. military operations and life for the U.S. military there? There's about 28,000 troops plus some family members, civilian employees.
There is great concern that this has reached the U.S. military here in South Korea. So far, it only has infected one service member. Two other people who are linked to U.S. bases here have been infected. But the fact that this virus is so highly contagious, and the fact that you have lots of people living close together on U.S. military bases, sharing communal housing, sharing meals, this is a situation that is possibly easy for a virus like this to spread. So there is great concern. You've seen a lot of restrictions as far as who is allowed to access the base, who is allowed to leave the base. A lot of businesses, entertainment sites, and things like this on U.S. military bases have either been closed or restricted.
That was VOA's correspondent in Seoul, Bill Gallo, speaking with editor Kate Pound Dawson. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Security forces deployed Thursday to parts of India's capital, where days of clashes between Hindus and Muslims killed at least 32 people. Japan will close schools nationwide to help control the spread of the new virus, the government announced on Thursday. And multinationals in China are urging China's government to provide tax relief while putting a priority on transparency and consistent policies in its fight against COVID-19. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. After 19 years of a grueling conflict that has killed more than 100,000 people, the war in Afghanistan may finally be ending. So far, all sides seem to be respecting an agreement to reduce violence that came into effect on Saturday. But as VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports, an internal political crisis has threatened to derail that process.
The Surpul checkpost on the Kabul-Kandahar highway used to constantly be under attack by the Taliban. Since the start of the partial truce, the soldiers guarding the post are breathing a sigh of relief.
We used to face relentless attacks. Every day, every night, we faced immense difficulties. Now things are much better.
The same is true for shopkeepers in the Durrani Bazaar in Wardak province. They've even increased their business hours.
I used to close my shop at 5 p.m., but now that there is a ceasefire, I close my shop at 6 p.m. We have not heard any gunfire in the last 2 days.
After 19 years of war, the United States and the Taliban agreed to a week-long partial truce. At the end of it, if all goes well, they will sign a deal on the 29th of February in Qatar's capital, Doha. The deal outlines a roadmap for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, one of President Donald Trump's campaign promises. It also requires the Taliban to negotiate with other Afghans, including the government, on the future direction of their country. In Washington, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Tuesday the goal is to reach an Afghan solution.
Our mission set is very clear. We want to assist and provide structure so that the Afghans can ultimately get an outcome that is led by Afghanis, driven by Afghanis, and is a long-term solution that all of the people of Afghanistan can live with.
But the Afghan government is in turmoil following presidential elections in which two candidates, incumbent Ashraf Ghani and rival Abdullah Abdullah, have declared victory. The bitter standoff comes at a time when Afghan politicians should be building consensus on how to negotiate with the Taliban, says analyst Michael Kugelman.
And yet, at that very moment when you most need that common united front, these long-standing divides within the Afghan political class have been exacerbated because of this political crisis coming out of the election.
Getting various Afghan factions to come together in one representative team to negotiate with the Taliban was already difficult. Observers say this crisis has just added to it. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. After accusing the media of stoking fears about the spread of coronavirus and creating panic in financial markets, President Donald Trump is now seeking to reassure Americans that his administration has the pathogen under control. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has the story.
A rare appearance by President Donald Trump in the White House briefing room, the second one since he came into office, to tell Americans about federal efforts against the coronavirus. His administration is requesting $2.5 billion of funding from Congress.
Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low.
A day earlier, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control warned that Americans should expect coronavirus outbreaks in their communities and disruption to their lives. Trump has been accusing the media of exaggerating the spread of the virus and creating panic in the stock market.
Obviously, we want to make sure we mitigate the economic impacts and the extent to which public fear is driving that. That's important. But I think the overall message that we should expect to see cases here, and get ready for those cases and think about how we're going to mitigate the impacts.
Infected Americans number in the dozens, but more cases are expected. So far, the U.S. has tested fewer than 500 people, only those who have traveled to China, despite the global spread of the virus.
Are you planning to test more people?
Well, we're testing everybody that we need to test, and we're finding very little problem.
Democrats have criticized Trump for downplaying the spread of the virus.
The administration has no plan. They have cut back repeatedly on our lines of defense, whether it is in the CDC or in the National Security Council.
There are more than 80,000 cases around the world with more than 2,700 deaths.
The idea of containing it, meaning stopping the spread, is probably not within reach. I think we should need to shift our focus to thinking about how to mitigate it.
Several U.S. states are preparing for worst-case scenarios, including New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo is requesting an additional $40 million of federal funding.
We'll also be asking the federal government to allow the state to do its own testing. This state has a very sophisticated Department of Health system and a very sophisticated laboratory.
That I'm going to be putting our Vice President Mike Pence in charge.
Trump has appointed Vice President Mike Pence to lead the federal government's effort against coronavirus. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News at the White House.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korean authorities have sealed their borders and imposed strict quarantine measures, declaring coronavirus prevention measures a matter of national survival. On the southern side of the peninsula, the United States and South Korea have indefinitely postponed joint military drills. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations says Rohingya Muslims and other minorities in Myanmar are expressing an upsurge in violations and abuse fueled by prejudice and hate speech. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights submitted a report on the root causes of abuse in Myanmar to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says laws and policies promoting discrimination and exclusion against religious and ethnic minorities in Myanmar have existed for more than half a century.
They have contributed to and perpetuated violence, extreme poverty, exploitation, and dispossession. Notably, the 1982 citizenship law rendered stateless a significant proportion of the Rohingya and other Muslims, compounding their vulnerability.
Oppression of the stateless Muslim minority peaked in August 2017. That was when violence and persecution, reported killings and rape by the Myanmar military, triggered a mass exodus of more than 700,000 Rohingya to Bangladesh. Bachelet says other ethnic and religious minorities across Myanmar also suffer serious human rights violations at the hands of the military. She says their counterinsurgency policies and tactics at times have deliberately targeted civilians.
The recent upsurge of xenophobia and violence can also be partly attributed to the stresses and uncertainties of Myanmar's current transition from decades of authoritarian rule. The dramatic expansion of public access to social media has enabled extremist and ultranationalist movements to propagate messages inciting hatred and violence, fueling communal tensions.
Bachelet urges the government to de-escalate xenophobic, discriminatory practices and to promote interfaith and interethnic tolerance. Myanmar's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Kyaw Moe Tun, says his government's efforts to achieve national reconciliation and peace with ethnic armed groups are advancing. But he adds transforming the country from authoritarian rule into a democratic federal union takes time. He says his government is concerned about the conflict in Rakhine State and those affected by it, but disclaims responsibility for the events that triggered the exodus of the Rohingya. He blames the mass displacement and current humanitarian situation of the Rohingya on terrorist attacks by ARSA, a Rohingya insurgent group active in northern Rakhine State. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now on VOA Asia, a Sunday school in a northern Virginia suburb of Washington, D.C. is teaching the Uyghur language and culture to Uyghur American youngsters as a way to counter the repression in China against Uyghurs in Xinjiang province. The school, Anna Karen Education, was founded in 2017 and was the first school in the U.S. to offer these courses, as VOA's En Ming Liu reports.
Sunday morning at Anna Care and Education in Fairfax, Virginia. The children here are busy learning their parents' mother tongue, the Uyghur language. They are also learning traditional Uyghur dances too. The Uyghur Sunday School is the first of its kind in the U.S. Saria Kashgari is the school's principal and co-founder.
I have 8 teachers. I have 80 students. But sometimes it became 100, some semester. Sometimes they go down to the 80 or 70, something like that. But we are almost between 100 to 70.
Kashgari moved to the United States with her family in 1999. She and her daughter decided to use their own savings to found the school in 2017 to keep the Uyghur culture alive following China's crackdown against the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province.
They burning our books, teaching books, and then class, all the from kindergarten to high school, they not teaching at all in our Uyghur language. And then they only teaching Chinese. And then recent year, they completely, even they don't want to let us speak Uyghur language. That's very, very severe now. We almost lost our old culture language.
The Sunday school offers Uyghur language courses in 3 levels, elementary, intermediate, and advanced. Tomorrow's Almas teaches advanced class.
Because the Chinese Communist Party's crackdown on Uyghurs in our homeland, even our language could hardly survive. The education here becomes very essential to the Uyghur descendants overseas to preserve our culture and language. So I started teaching here.
For the students in the advanced class, they feel they are doing more than just learning a language.
So if you learn your language, you can't forget it, and you can pass it on to your children.
I'm also here, there's an Islamic class there here too, and I want to learn about my religion and see how I can become a better person and learn my my mom's language and where she's from.
That's the key, learning the culture.
Our main culture is Uyghur song and then with the dance. Every family, every culture, every community, the girls know how to play dance, and then boys is playing also.
A report by the Uyghur Human Rights Project says the Chinese government has intimidated Uyghur Americans by threatening to put their family members in Xinjiang in camps. Kashgari says she has lost touch with her siblings in Xinjiang after opening the school.
I feel I'm scared, and then I have some nervous, and then I always thinking about that. I have very, but I think it's whatever, what happened, but I have to be continue this school.
En Ming Liu, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
The American Academy of Arts and Letters, founded in 1898, is one of the most respected honor societies in the United States. Recently, an accomplished Cambodian-American composer was brought into the fold. VOA's Chetra Chop reports.
Internationally celebrated Cambodian-American composer Chinnery Ong has been awarded one of the highest honors in the U.S., a lifetime membership at the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Ong will be officially inducted in May. The 77-year-old composer was chosen based on his artistic merit in music composition.
So I can play like one phrase now.
Ong says he owes his success to his own Cambodian identity.
It's my culture. It's what I learned from the rice field that I spoke of, what touches me the most. And I think I'm proud to say that I'm a Cambodian.
Ong got a scholarship to study clarinet in the U.S. in 1964 and later received a Doctor of Musical Arts from Columbia University in 1974. His music is known for incorporating Eastern characteristics into Western classical settings.
In spirit, my music, yes, does carry the background of the culture in Cambodia. Without that background, I wouldn't be able to compose, let's say, Inner Voices.
The 20-minute award-winning piece, Inner Voices, was Ong's second orchestral work following a hiatus between 1974 and 1985. For some of those years, Cambodia was ruled by the Khmer Rouge, a communist regime that killed 1.7 million people and almost completely destroyed the country's rich culture. Ong turned his attention to the rescue of surviving relatives and the rebuilding of the traditions of Khmer court music.
I'm the first Cambodian and first American to win this.
In 1989, Inner Voices made Ong the first American to win the prestigious Grawemeyer Award. Ong said the piece was his attempt to embrace the expressions of many cultures in a singular musical language. And he got the inspiration from a dream.
In the dream, I thought I had received an invitation to attend a ritual. And I heard the chanting about a text that this young Cambodian lady, a teenager, decided to commit suicide and left that text to her parent to set it into music, into song, funeral song, during her funeral.
Tapping into his dream to compose Inner Voices, Ong employed what he calls the interaction within himself to create an art that speaks to a global audience.
You are not only looking outward and what could be learned and so forth, but don't forget that another 50% is the intangible. It is your feeling, which is not yours. When you go deeper, you hit on archetypal type of dimension and so forth, and that could be shared globally.
Not yet. Today, Ong is a distinguished professor of music at University of California, San Diego, and works to preserve and innovate Cambodian traditional music. I'm Chetra Chap for VOA News, San Diego.
That is VOA Asia for today and for this week. It has been a busy one. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back on Monday. We hope you'll join us then as well. And until then, be well.